We'll go to the third case of the morning. City Darius Holmes v. Martin Kitek et al. Mr. Fox.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. First, I'd like to, with the Court's permission, request 4-minute rebuttal as opposed to the 2-minute I originally asked for.
Whatever you take, we'll watch the light.
Okay, thank you, Judge. We're here on a grant of two summary judgment motions, which were filed separately on a unlawful arrest claim and an excessive force claim. And there's two overview type issues I'd like to initially address. First and foremost, in this case, we have not just two, but three wildly different versions of the facts of what happened. And if plaintiff's version was ever credited, which it was not by the lower court, this motion could not have been granted. The second overview type point that I'd like to address is that what has been disturbing is that since the first day the trial was to have begun, we have been dealing with a constantly moving target in terms of what we were to expect and what was to happen and how we were supposed to oppose summary judgment motions. And the reason I say that is this. On the first day of trial, after we had all prepared and we were all ready, both sides walked in ready for court, Judge Norgel said he wasn't going to try the case and he wanted to, quote unquote, revisit the issue on probable cause. The issue hadn't been visited in the first place, and he didn't know any of the facts of the case, according to Judge Norgel. He told us to go out into the hall and think about it, and the obvious inference was the defendant should make a motion. We walked back into court, and the defendant said, we'll make a motion for summary judgment.
Mr. Fox, was that really the first status hearing in the case?
Virtually. The first time we were in front of the judge. Virtually.
That's just astounding.
We were stunned by it ourselves. In fact, when we got the trial date much earlier on, the defendants moved for a continuance of the trial because it was a conflict for them. We didn't have any problem with it. We agreed. Judge Norgel denied their motion without us even coming to court and having a hearing. We didn't come to court also because we got along with defense counsel. We didn't have any discovery issues or motions to compel or anything. The judge never called us in for a status. If he didn't know what the facts were about, as he said, it was not our fault. We did everything timely. It wasn't like we didn't litigate the case. We took depositions. We did written discovery. It wasn't a case that we forgot about. We did everything timely. So that was the very first day that we walked in front of the judge. And without no prior notice to us, we wasted all that time preparing for trial and were told we weren't during trial. So that was our first day in trial. So the defendant then, and the moving target continued like this. The defendant made a motion, and by the way, at that first appearance, the judge gave the defense some ideas of what cases they should look to. After the hearing, the defense makes their motion for summary judgment. In their motion for summary judgment, they say in footnote 2 at the bottom of the first page that they're not making the motion on the excessive force claim because there's tribal issues of fact on it. We're only going to make it on the unlawful arrest claim. They make the motion. We oppose it. The next moving target became this. Judge Norgel decided the motion on a completely and wholly different argument that the defense raised and that we had no notice of.
The motion on what? Probable cause?
On a probable cause, correct. He did it on issues that they did not raise, and we had no notice in advance. The moving target continued like this. Even though the defense said there is a tribal issue of fact on excessive force, in Judge Norgel's opinion on the unlawful arrest claim granting it, he said, the judge is taking the excessive force issue under advisement and instructed defendant to move to file briefs on excessive force. Well, the excessive force issue wasn't an issue at that time, so I didn't know what he was taking under advisement because they hadn't put it in an issue at that time. So the defense then makes their motion for the excessive force issue. We then respond to their motion, and we respond to the motion as they put the case at issue. And the basis of their brief was there was no serious injury to the plaintiff, therefore no excessive force. Judge Norgel, again, ignored that entire brief, the entire reasoning, and again, with no notice to us, he ruled on an entirely different set of grounds on that motion. So when I say we've been confronted with a disturbing set of facts, that's what I mean. This is, and the defendants can't deny any of this. We've put the transcripts in the record, the opinions in front of the court. That's what we put into the record.
You really meant they couldn't successfully deny it, because they can deny anything they want to.
That's correct. I will submit this to the court without sounding presumptuous. I've never had to say this before. I can absolutely say with surety that this court cannot grant the motions on the basis that Judge Norgal cannot affirm the motion on the basis that Judge Norgal did. And I'll tell you why. On the excessive force issue, Judge Norgal expressly said in his opinion, at the end of his opinion, that the excessive force was okay because Officer Teipel, when he put my client Holmes in a wrist lock, that was okay under the existing set of circumstances. The only problem is, it's undisputed by both parties that Officer Teipel never put Mr. Holmes in a wrist lock. That was never contended, that was never argued, that was never hinted at, that was never a claim or defense in this case. So it's impossible, legally impossible, and they don't argue it anywhere. So it's legally impossible and factually impossible for the district court to affirm Judge Norgal on that basis. And on the unlawful arrest issue, Judge Norgal said on that issue that he's granting summary judgment because the facts undisputedly show that my client pushed defendant Teipel. Now, my client, this is impossible to grant, literally and unequivocally impossible, because not only does my client deny that he didn't push Officer Teipel doesn't contend that my client pushed him. So that's what we've got. And then...
Well, you may have second thoughts. Be careful.
I'm sorry?
You may have second thoughts, so, you know.
I might have second thoughts, but
no,
I mean,
not you. I'm talking about Teipel.
Oh, Teipel might have, yes.
You know, you can always alter the facts to meet the judgment as opposed to the other way around.
Right. That may be. So that's why the defense didn't argue these things that the court said. And the defense, frankly, didn't know. I'll speak for them. They won't agree with me. But the defense didn't know what to argue because the facts were all in dispute. So the defense argued in the unlawful arrest claim that my client said during the course of this confrontation, my client said, and my client did say this in his deposition, he heard one of the officer Piatek say, he hit me, take him down. Now, my client testified that he was in a vehicle at a 7-Eleven at night doing nothing illegal, and in fact, they saw him with a single passenger. Judge Norrell kept referring to several passengers. There just isn't any several passengers anywhere in the record. But my client was then approached
by... Well, it was dark. It was hard to tell.
Right. It was dark. It was hard to tell. It was
especially from where Judge Norgal sat. You know.
It certainly was. My client was approached by Officer Piatek and asked for his ID. Officer Piatek was in plain clothes, and I think my client probably got sarcastic with him and said, "Where's your ID?" And he didn't know, he realized he was a cop right away or not a police officer right away. He was in plain clothes. But after that, my client was taken out of the vehicle. And my client's testimony is that he did not resist. He did not do anything. But they called him a smartass for his comments. When Teipel came on the scene, Teipel says he looked at the car and didn't feel threatened by anything. There was nothing in there that concerned him. He didn't see any indication of guns, weapons, knives, or any threat to him. Then Teipel came over, according to my client, after my client was called a smartass, and slams my client's head onto the vehicle. That's my client's version. And then they took my client, and Piatek then put my client into a wrist lock, causing him pain, again, gratuitously, probably because of my client's comments, gratuitously put him in pain, and my client was indicating that. And then both officers threw him on the ground and handcuffed him. And then my client's version of the story is that Officer Teipel then put his knee, put it in his face and ground his knee into the ground, which was supported by the fact that when my client went to the hospital, they noted all these bruises and abrasions to his face. And they also had to cast his arm because it was sprained so badly. Those are the facts, as my client said. Nobody can deny that my client said that these are the facts. So what the defendants did to try and make an argument for unlawful arrest is they tried to say that my client's comment that Officer Piatek said, "He hit me, take him down," was justification for Teipel to arrest him because Teipel heard this. Now, Teipel's standing right next to Piatek. Teipel never claims he heard the argument. I'm sorry. Teipel never claims he heard the statement. Piatek never claims to have made the statement. Nowhere in the record.
Did anybody ask either of them if that was the case?
That specific question.
Or they just didn't bring it up.
It was every what was asked was tell us everything that was said.
Your client said he heard it.
My client said he heard it. What was asked was everything that you heard said, and it never came up. It didn't come up in the criminal case. It didn't come up in the police reports as a reason for arrest. It didn't come up in the memos that the officers wrote in the reasons for arrest. And it didn't come up in the depositions when they were asked everything that was said.
But your client helped him out and told us, said he heard it.
Well, you know what?
Don't fight with me.
Okay, that's what he said. But my client said it.
Yeah.
Even if it was said...
I was just suggesting you say that there's nothing in the record. There is something in the record. This is supplied by the plaintiff.
Right, supplied by the plaintiff. That's correct, but not by the defendants as a reason to arrest. Now, even if it was said, though, it was only said, and the jury could reasonably believe it was said as a sarcastic pretext by Piatek to just take action and just beat him up. And it wouldn't be the first time that happened. And given that my client testified he never hit or pushed any officer, it would seem to be a tribal issue of fact on that. I think that's a reasonable conclusion that my client uttering those words don't take the issues away from the jury, because there's plenty of inferences that could be drawn from one officer saying he never heard it, the other officer saying he never said it, and my client saying he never hit anybody, and Typel standing right there and being in a position to see one way or the other whether my client really hit Piatek.
Now you're into your 4 minutes.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. I didn't want to interrupt you in mid-flight, though. I mean, you know.
Right. I'm going to briefly say this brings us to the bias issue. We're asking this court to, if we can reverse, the court to put us in front of a different judge. And I had a whole big argument for that. So
don't bother with that.
I'm not going to bother with it.
Attaboy.
Okay. I'm done.
Shikanen, do you find any tribal issues of fact?
I do not, Your Honor.
Really?
Yes, and I will tell this honorable court why.
Not on the excessive force? Resolution of that claim certainly depends on whose version of events one credits.
Your Honor, I believe that once the issue was decided that the officers had probable cause to arrest the plaintiff for battery and resisting arrest, that the officers at that point could use reasonable force to effectuate that arrest.
You mean like slamming someone's head against the roof of a car and grinding your knee into someone who's on the ground?
Your
that
Honor,
kind of that kind of stuff?
Your Honor, I believe the evidence in the case is that plaintiff testified that Officer Typel, when he got on the scene, slammed or pushed his head against the roof of the car, and that action caused him no injury whatsoever.
At this stage of the game, we view the record in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, not to you.
Correct, and it was the plaintiff who testified.
Yeah, but the plaintiff testifies rather pointedly that he was minding his own business and got jerked out of the car and whacked to the ground. Now, in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, isn't that a tribal issue of fact, whatever your people say?
Your Honor,
forgive me. Oh,
yes.
This is cruel, isn't it? But what level of force is used and whether that level of force is justified is always a matter for a jury to sort out, isn't it?
I would say, Your Honor, that the case law states that it is not always, but in most instances that it is.
Yeah.
And I think that what we have here is a situation where, and we will acknowledge that Judge Norgal, in both of his opinions, got some of the facts wrong. And he based his opinion on facts that we didn't argue in our brief. So we're not asking this court.
Maybe he was thinking of a different case.
Yeah. So we're not asking this court to affirm the ruling based on all of the reasoning within Judge Norgal's two opinions.
Well, I mean, it's pretty telling that you haven't relied on Judge Norgal's rationale in defending the entry of summary judgment.
That's correct, Your Honor. But what we have brought forward is the evidence, and it's undisputed, that plaintiff testified in his deposition that he is up against the car. And number one, he's already admitted that this is a valid Terry stop. I mean, this is a dangerous situation. The very night before, there was an armed robbery at this 7-Eleven.
We know.
Okay, so he's up against
the Terry stop.
Yeah, so he's up against the car, and his testimony is that Piatek's got him in a wrist lock, and he admits that he's moving and trying to reposition his arm to get out of the wrist lock because he says it's causing him pain. He then says that Piatek released the wrist lock, and after he released it, plaintiff says, Piatek says, he hit me, take him to the ground. Right after that statement, the plaintiff testified in his deposition, he was taken to the ground. So the reasonable inference that we have here is that, in fact, the statement that plaintiff says was made. And that statement corroborates what the officers say happened.
No, the officers didn't say they said that.
Not that he said it, but the officer. What I'm saying, Your Honor, is that it corroborates. The reasonable inference of what the plaintiff says corroborates the officer's testimony that, in fact, that's what happened. He pushed him. So we believe that the evidence in the record, you know, the plaintiff wants to dance away from his own testimony. Plaintiff's the one that testified that Piatek said that. So based on his own testimony, we believe that probable cause existed for the arrest.
Did anybody ask either officer that?
The record was silent, Your Honor.
They didn't discuss the issue at all.
They did not.
The officers' depositions. I guess they were deposed.
Both officers were deposed, and the specific question was not asked. Once the officers had probable cause for the arrest, then they can use that amount of force that's reasonably necessary to effectuate the arrest. Plaintiff complains about three incidents where he says that the force was excessive. The first is that Officer Teipel pushed or slammed his head against the roof of the car.
He said slammed.
Well, he used the word slammed, Your Honor. I would
so
agree
you,
with
you
that.
So you reduced a little bit to push.
And he also testified in his deposition that that slam did not cause him any injury.
He's a weightlifter. He's tough.
He's a weightlifter. He's 230 pounds. He admitted that he may have told the officers at the scene, you can't hurt me. I'm a weightlifter. The second thing that he says is that the officers were not justified or used unreasonable force when they took him to the ground. Well, if we accept the premise that, in fact, he pushed the officers and he pushed Officer Piatek.
Did he say he did?
He did not say he did, Your Honor.
There you
Honor.
Go.
No.
See, there's your tribal issue of fact, just off the top.
Well,
they deserved each other, but I'm just kind of modestly curious at that. How we arrive at the fact that there's no tribal issue of fact when the allegations, the little flight most favorable to them, show that there's a large dispute of fact.
Well, again, Your Honor, I would argue to this court that there's not a tribal issue of fact based on the plaintiff's own testimony.
I didn't want you to desert the trial.
Excuse me?
I didn't want you to desert the trial court. It'll be appellant next time instead of appellee if you do, but then there you go ahead.
But, Your Honor, I believe that the plaintiff's own testimony establishes the probable cause and that he can't now dance away from that testimony
but
because it doesn't suit him.
Forgive me.
Yes.
But if you look at his allegations, Holmes's allegations, that he wasn't actively resisting arrest, then, of course, grounding his face into the ground or grinding his face into the ground wouldn't be justified. Notwithstanding Piatek's statement, if it was made, that Holmes had hit him.
Your Honor, we would concede that if this court finds that there's no probable cause to arrest, then the action that plaintiff alleges happened, a gratuitous grinding of his face into the ground, would not be justified. That we would concede. But, Your Honor, we have a different situation when probable cause does exist for the arrest.
I want you to explain something to
me. Yes.
what is a gratuitous grinding of the face while someone is lying on the ground? What is that?
I guess what I'm trying to explain to the court is that if he is an innocent party, as opposed to an arrestee that the officers are trying to arrest. Excuse me, Your Honor.
I say gratuitous, I think means free. It didn't cost him a dime. He got his face grounded for free.
Right. Correct.
A generous impulse. In the
special today, one grinding of the face into the ground.
Well, I think that the testimony is that when this, and I guess the use of the word grinding is a matter of semantics, you know, I think the testimony was that his face is being grinded or pushed against the ground as the officer is trying to handcuff him. And if the officer has probable cause to arrest and he's trying to get him handcuffed.
Splendid jury argument. Go ahead.
Yeah, that in that instance, the officer was justified in using a minimal amount of force in order to effectuate the arrest.
Everyone would assume the knee in the face is to keep his head down to in order to handcuff. Is that?
That's correct. And this grinding of the face ended up with the plaintiff, by his own admission, getting some ointment for the redness or the abrasion on his face. So this is not a police brutality case of a serious beating.
Some pain medicine, too, at the hospital?
Pain medication that he never got filled. So I don't know how bad the injury
he's 230 pounds of weightlifter. He doesn't feel pain. He won't acknowledge it if he does. So.
Well, Your Honor, that may be true. Yeah.
Well, but I admire your courage, too. With that soft cast on anyway, right?
Right.
I admire your courage, too, by the way. I admire your courage, too.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think that what the evidence shows is that the injury that happened to the plaintiff here was from the wrist lock. That's what all the subsequent medical treatment was for. It was for the injury that occurred to his wrist. The plaintiff, by his own admission, says, I didn't get any follow-up treatment for the abrasion to my face. I got some ointment for the abrasion at the hospital. So we would submit that although the district court based its rulings on facts that we did not argue, and some of them are incorrect, that we would still submit that probable cause did exist for Mr. Holmes' arrest and that the officers and Officer Teipel did not use excessive force.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You got anything to add to what I already said?
I just wanted to address the he hit me point one last time.
Why?
Okay, I won't.
Oh, don't be cowed.
Okay, here's why. My client makes this statement that he says he hit me at a point in time when Officer Piatek is on his right holding a wrist and Officer Teipel is on his left. That's holding his wrist. That's the context of the statement that he hit me, take him down. Now, my client says he never hit anybody. Officer Teipel's testimony is that Piatek didn't hit him, but that Holmes pushed off the vehicle and swinging back, that he hit Piatek at that point, like that.
That's a good jury argument, too.
It is.
Wave your arms.
And I'm just trying to say why the he hit me shouldn't be credited, except as anything but an insincere comment to try and justify.
Okay, all right.
And
you Piatek, did it.
Piatek is settled, right?
Right.
So this is the only one left is Teipel.
That's correct.
Why isn't it reasonable to assume that Officer Teipel heard Officer Piatek make that statement?
Well,
it seems obvious that Piatek was making that statement to Teipel. Why shouldn't we assume he said it loudly enough for both Teipel and Holmes to hear it?
You know, well, one, he never claims to have heard it, and two, in several reports, and in deposition, they were asked everything that they heard and said. Although the specific question, did you hear him say he hit me, was imposed, but they asked about everything. So one, he says he never heard it. Two, Piatek says he never said it, and it wasn't a basis for arrest. And my client says no, he didn't hit anybody. And then Piatek says the only hitting came when plaintiff pushed off the car and swung his arm backwards and hit Teipel. Teipel says the only hitting came when plaintiff pushed off the car, swung his arm back and hit Piatek. So they're even inconsistent.
Fall down then?
I'm sorry?
Did all three of them fall down at that point?
Well, my client says they threw him to the ground.
No, I thought I read somewhere where everybody fell down.
No, well, that's the officer's contention.
Oh.
that my client pushed off the car, taking all three to the ground. But
that's what I thought. Somebody said that.
Okay. My client says he never pushed off the car in that fashion. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Case taken under advisement.